Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with the professor, John Clayton. If you have a question for John, text it in, 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll try to get to as many of your questions as we can. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
Well, 3-0, and in typical Seahawks fashion, they make it very exciting. They don't have many comfortable wins, do they?
No, they don't. And
this defense, I mean, John, the defense.
Yeah, I mean, but still, it's like you look at it, and they're 3-0. And they're, you know, up there with Green Bay as the number one seed in the NFC. So you can complain about the numbers, you can complain about the points, you can complain about the yards, all those different things allowed, but they're still winning. And things should – now, again, you worry about the injuries. That's going to be a big factor. But in the end, I think that it's one where you got to just try to gut through it and then hope things get better, hope guys get healthier, and hope the defense can start coming together.
Boy, that was quite a blow yesterday when we got the injury report, you know, where...
Six players.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, you know, you've had Marquise Blair and, of course, Irvin are very valuable on the defense, and another three guys that are pretty key. I mean, Nico Thorpe, you know, more of a special team guy, but, you know, the way that that Dunbar has been playing and Leno Hill, yeah, all of a sudden, it feels, John, like they can't suffer too many more. Hopefully it slows down here.
Well, I mean, you see that, but that's the league-wide trend right now. I mean, it's bad. I counted up, because I've been keeping track of this since 2015, that there was 256 missed starts, because what I do is I count the missed starts, and that was bigger, 215 in the first 3 weeks. There's 254, and we're not even including tonight's game. And then this week, because I thought, because remember how I was saying last week, I thought there'd be 25 to 30 starters that wouldn't be back this next week.
Mm-hmm.
I was wrong. It was 44. So it's like that's how bad it was, to a point where there was 113 players who had missed starts in week three, and that's more than any since 2015, since I charted it. So we're off to record numbers. I mean, I don't know if you saw San Francisco. They just came out, and they got more injuries. Jordan Reed has an MCL sprain, so he's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. Reed, the safety, the safety's going to be okay. Greenlaw's not going to be back this week. They may get Deebo Samuel. That's a chance for him to come off the injured list. But, you know, when you're down nine starters, and they technically finished the game minus two tight ends or two best tight ends because George Kittle didn't play, and also now you got Jordan Reed. I mean, that's a mess.
Yeah. How about, John, with Chris Carson? First of all, you know, what his status is, what you think, but then also, you know, what about the play on that? What do you think is going to happen to the fine and things like that? That was a pretty ugly tackle.
They're definitely going to be a fine because, you know, I know that they're saying there was no intent, but, you know, he showed a couple things that he must be a dirty player. And so I know that Mike Nolan came to his defense, and I don't think he was saying that, you know, he wasn't excusing the squeezing of the knee or anything like that, but he just said, "Oh, this isn't a dirty player. This wasn't intentional." But I think most of everybody disagrees.
Yeah, the video says otherwise.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that one is, you know, the slow motion, I always think, but that one was pretty, that was pretty bad. I mean, the helmet to helmet on Russ, mm-hmm. I just always think, well, look, that's a bang bang play, but it's weird too because, you know, now I mean, that was something that you might see in, like, the 70s, right, John?
Right.
Like,
right.
You know, that kind of play. I mean, somebody was asking me, I think it was John Curley was asking me, I remember a guy poking me in the eye one time, and then, you know, I had a hit myself that looked bad, but, you know, I called and apologized, said I didn't mean to do it and everything, but, you know, it's something like that it's pretty rare these days because it seems like, first of all, everybody knows one another,
mm-hmm.
or they have the same agent or trainer or whatever, and the guys are more friendly, they're swapping jerseys after the game, and, you know, it just seems like this guy's from like the 1960s or something, like a Raider team from 1965.
Exactly.
Here's the cut quickly. Sorry, Jim. I just want to play the cut you were talking about. Mike McCarthy talking about Tristan Hill as the guy who hurt Chris Carson on that play.
Well, I think it's like a lot of things in the game of football. First of all, there was zero intent for injury there. So, you know, I want to make that clear. I know Tristan, you know, that's not exactly... was his intent. I think you see fundamentals particularly early in the season, particularly this season, that we need to continue to work through and do a better job of. So I just think he was trying to wrap and roll, and the result of it occurred in the injury. I mean, by no means do we want to see players get hurt, especially when it's unnecessary. But by all, you know, I could trust me, there was zero intent involved there.
Is a rap and roll something very similar to music, where you rap and then, of course, you rock and roll? Is that what the rap and roll is?
Rap and roll. Sounds like the name of a sushi place.
Yeah, it does. Except that Carson was face down on the ground. The play was, I mean, he was already over. Then you see him give kind of a little extra oomph on that roll there. He just,
I'm always reticent to criticize, though. I mean, you can't judge intent, certainly. But you're right. I mean, he's gonna defend his player.
Yeah, he's not going to say, you know, he did try to hurt him. We told him not to, but he tried. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
Well, he should have said, well, I've told the guys, yeah, we got to hurt him, you know. get that outside ACL. Is that what Greg Williams said? Remember in the,
thing
about Bounty Gate?
Bounty Gate. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, I wonder if he'll come out and apologize. But do we know anything about Carson, how bad it is?
According to Pete, I mean, Pete says it's not too bad, and there's a chance that he might be able to play. So it's a first-degree sprain, so you know that's not as bad as second-degree or third-degree. It's not like Jordan Brooks with the MCL, which knows he's going to be out a couple weeks.
Oh,
so
boy.
You get the idea that, again, it was a first-degree MCL, so it may not be the 4 to 6 that you would normally expect. You know, it could be 2 to 4. But I think that there's a chance he might be able to play. Clearly, if he does, I think they'll take it easy on him. He's not going to be, you know, out there for 40, 50 plays. I don't see that happening.
All right, John, if Pete Carroll calls you up and says, hey, Professor, I've got one of the greatest offenses in NFL history, but I have one of the worst defenses in NFL history, what should I do? What can I do to fix my defense?
Coach him up. That's about what you have to do. I mean, you have to try to get everybody on the same page. You need to start cutting down any injuries. But when you start to think about, you know, losing, you know, 2 to 3 guys every week, that's going to cause all kind of confusion. I mean, you know, they were down 2 defensive backs. You know, now they're getting thinner at the linebacker position. So, you know, you just try to do that. I mean, I don't go for the idea of firing coach. I mean, that's not it. That's wrong, because there's, I think, more problems than good if you do that. Because, again,
well, why, John?
Well, I mean, Ken Norton.
If you look at Ken Norton's record at Oakland and here in Seattle, it's not
Oakland
good.
Was terrible.
Well, okay.
Oakland was in a stretch of like seven years.
It's been terrible in Seattle, too.
What's that?
The defense hasn't been good in Seattle either.
Okay, so you want to fire the guy.
I would think that would be something they should consider.
They're 3-0. You're going to fire the defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I would consider it, John.
Okay, and of course,
wouldn't you say they're 3-0 in spite of the defense, John?
Yeah, you could say that. I mean, or because of Russell Wilson and the offense, you can say that. But also, it's like you know, there's more creativity, even though some of it's not working. But it's more creativity on the defense, because, you know, now they've gone 30% blitzing, 33-34% blitzing, and, you know, they've got players that can do it. But unfortunately now, you know, Jamal Adams, he's probably not going to be able to play this week with a groin injury, first degree groin injury. But tell me, and Dave, I'll put this one on you. How do you think it's going to go in the locker room with KJ Wright and with Bobby Wagner if you fired the guy that was their mentor? It's not going to go over well.
Yeah, no, that's true.
And I'll tell you the other thing, which I'm very sensitive to right now. It's like there are so few black coordinators, particularly offensive coordinators, so few black coordinators. I'd hate the idea that you would fire one. That's just ridiculous. That's sad. Because, again, there needs to be more black coaches in this league. There needs to be more diversity. And, you know, I think if you have a coach like Ken Norton Jr., you give him every chance in the world to succeed. Because that would be wrong to start to do something to him like that.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's going to happen. That's
no,
for sure. I mean, they're 3-0. But, you know, the other thing is, you know, sit down and, you know, maybe Pete gets more involved. You know, maybe Clint Hurt, whatever. But, you know, they're trying to find ways. But, yeah, I mean, I think they have to do something. You know, and I'm not saying fire Ken Norton.
No.
But, you know, 64 plays. 27% of the plays have been for over 10 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, the way you fix that is, and this is something you can't always control, but you can try, is get takeaways, because that's what they did last year. They're also stopping the run. But, you know, those things, the deep crossers, things like that, that's definitely a problem. You know, when you see, like, Shaquille, he makes a really good play for that on that interception,
yeah.
which I'm pretty sure was cover two, and he just kind of undercut in a zone. It might have been man, but it's hard to tell. But it was a beautiful play. I mean, he makes that, but then he just, you know, the guy gets past him and beats him, and it's a perfect throw and catch. But, I mean, it just keeps happening. So, you know, you've got to figure out how to get, like, the deep crosser, you know, taken care of and just pay particular attention to that. But, you know, he has, I thought, been doing a good job of sort of manufacturing pressure. They got 10 hits on the quarterback the other day, you know, and they're using things. The only thing I'm not a fan of is the zone blitz. And that's just because you're dropping defensive linemen back into coverage and they don't know how to cover. But, you know, they're trying to find any way that they can to get pressure. So, yeah, but I mean, at 3-0, I think it's, that'd be pretty bizarre, John, just in the history of the NFL.
Yeah.
If you fired your.
But also, I think you have to put everything in the context of what's going on in the National Football League and not isolating saying Seattle's an island and everything is going wrong with Seattle and no place else. I mean, you know, say what you want about Green Bay. They're 3-0 too, but they have to have Aaron Rodgers score 40 points a game to be able to win. I mean, they gave up 34 points to a Minnesota Viking team that has been terrible on offense. Kirk Cousins is off to a horrible start. You know, New Orleans scored 30 points on him last night. And so it's like, you look at that, you look at the New Orleans Saints. I mean, a defense that I thought would be one of the better ones in football, and look at the points that they're allowing. We are in a league right now, I don't know if Pete Carroll addressed it when he was on with Danny and Gallant this morning, that there's, you know, just, you've got offenses right now that are passing the ball more. They're being successful passing the ball. The good, experienced quarterbacks are the ones that are doing well. And so you start to look and you say, okay, who did the Seahawks face? All right, he's facing a former MVP in Cam Newton, a former quarterback who took his team to the Super Bowl and MVP in Matt Ryan, and then they face Dak Prescott, who's off to a fantastic start. And so it's like, okay, and you're doing it at a time when you're still trying to catch up on defense because with no preseason games and no offseason program. It's not easy.
Well, fair enough, Professor. I just look at somebody texted in too that when Tom Cable was let go, they made a change to Solari and there was an upgrade.
But that was after the season. You want to fire him during the season?
And then Kansas City, they didn't make it to the Super Bowl and they made a change at defensive coordinator and the defense got better. It wasn't great, but it was good enough for them to win the Super Bowl. I'm just throwing it out there as a suggestion because. Truly, John, when you look at the statistics in Oakland, in Seattle, it hasn't been good with Ken Norton as defensive coordinator. That's all. I think I'm stating facts on that. It just, they haven't been good. And whether it's personnel, whether it's schemes, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm going to.
But you wanted to fire him during the season. I mean, in the case of the two coaches that you just mentioned, that was after the season.
And well, do you think they have a defense that could get Seattle to the Super Bowl?
Yes.
Do you really?
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. As long as Russell Wilson keeps playing the way that he does and the offense keeps doing the things that they have, they've not been beaten yet. And they've had double-digit leads in three games. Tell me how many double-digit leads they had last year.
Yeah. Well, there's going to be a game along the way where Cam Newton scores from the one and Dak Prescott connects in the final seconds.
But you're also going to have games where you're taking on quarterbacks who complete 59% of their passes, have more sacks and interceptions. I mean, you see the gauntlet of quarterbacks that's going to help the stats on this defense, you know, whether it's going to be Daniel Jones, whether it's going to be Dwayne Haskins, whether it's going to be Sam Darnold. I mean, you look at the five or six quarterbacks they're going to face that are 3 years or less experience, and that's where they start to catch up a little bit.
Okay, but Andy Dalton threw for 400 yards against this defense last year, and so did Matt Schaub.
Yeah, okay. Did they make the playoffs? Did they win the games?
No, they didn't. I hate going back and forth with you. Like
yeah,
this,
I know, because it's like...
I absolutely love you, but I just, we differ on this. I just don't see the defense getting better with him in charge. That's all.
Okay, so we'll see where it goes at the end of the season, okay? Because, again, this is an unusual season. And, you know, say what you want. Say what you want still. They did make the key stops at the right time. Again, not many, but it's like they made the stop on Cam Newton at the one-yard line. They had the interception in the end zone. I thought one of the keys to the game was, you know, at least allowing the Cowboys to only get a field goal in that last one that gave, you know, gave them the one-point lead. And then here's Russell Wilson because, I mean, you know, I think, you know, we're all standing and sitting there and watching, and it's like, oh, you're giving Russell Wilson 3 minutes and 59 seconds to go win the game? Well, guess who's going to go win the game? It's going to be Russell Wilson.
Well, here's the other thing, too, I would say about the whole – and we've always said this, so might as well stick to our guns. It's Pete's defense. You know, and that's the way it's been described is, you know, whoever's the D coordinator is sort of the keeper of Pete's defense. So, you know, look, it's on Coach Carroll and everybody. So, I mean, singling out Norton, I mean, I don't think we've ever thought of it that way, that this is Ken Norton's defense, have we?
Well, no, we've thought of it as Pete's, and Quinn ran it well, Bradley ran it well, and for whatever reason, Norton doesn't run it well.
Yeah, well, I mean...
So if we're going to continue with the theme that it is truly Pete's defense, you had two guys who had a lot of success in managing it and running it the way it appeared to be set up to run, and this is not what I'm imagining this is not what they intended. Well, it's not running the way they want it to.
Go back to year one with Brian Schottenheimer. And remember in the Denver and Chicago game, you know, Brian was so enamored with Russell Wilson's talent that he called more passing plays than anybody expected. And he ended up losing both those games. And what did Pete Carroll end up doing? They had a big confab in his office, and they say, no, let's do what we normally do. Of course, it's not we, because again, at that time, Brian's only been coaching for two games as a Seahawks offensive coordinator. So they put their minds together and they started to get back to the running game, and that turned out to be okay. They had a good season like that. I would have to make the same thing, because I mean, do you think that Pete Carroll is going to let Ken Norton Jr. do something that he doesn't want to have happen?
Right.
That's not going to happen.
I mean, I agree.
I mean, that's something that just is not going to be right. And so corrections need to be made. And, what you worry about this week, and I just look at this Miami game as a possible trap game because of all the injuries, the fatigue and all that stuff. I mean, you know, this team needs desperately to get to the bye week in week six as fast as possible, but also to be there at 5-0, that's what they need to do.
Who's going to go first, John? Dan Quinn or Adam Gase?
Adam Gase. The talk in New York today, because remember, they were highly evaluating him on Sunday's game, and of course the evaluation is going to go stinko for him because they weren't even competitive, but they have a Thursday night game. So to make a change like that this on a Monday when you have a Thursday night game probably would be a dumb thing to do. But if he loses and has another bad game, I would have to think with that 10-day break after the fact that they have the Thursday night game, he's going to go first.
And then Quinn, it feels like Atlanta's trying to get him fired. I mean, the way they blow these leads, you're like, seriously? Two out of three games you've done this? And then you throw in the Super Bowl. I mean, man, this is a bad rep to have.
Well, here's what I don't understand is that, here's Dan Quinn. Now, we watched yesterday an incredible thing happen in Tennessee, because here's Mike Vrabel, and he was always a good play caller on defense, but he gave the play calling to one of his assistants, and unfortunately, that assistant got COVID, so he couldn't attend a game. And so, Vrabel delegated some other things on the sidelines and let some other people do some things, and he called the game. Now, again, it was 31-30 to Minnesota, but, I mean, he stepped in and helped out. If things get bad, which you're wondering about, and they're bad now in Atlanta, why is Dan Quinn having two different coordinators, coaches call plays? Jeff Ulrich, you remember him, the old special teams player, coached here for a little bit. He's calling the early down plays, and Raheem Morris is then doing the passing down plays. And it's like, it's not working. It's like, why are you continuing that? Either Dan, you call it, or let one guy call it, but get it right. It's not right now.
John, good news, bad news. The good news is the Rams got beat by Buffalo. Bad news is the Seahawks have to go play Buffalo.
Oh, yeah.
In Buffalo, and Josh Allen. Pretty surprising. Maybe not, but 10 touchdowns and one interception. Pretty good quarterback play out of him.
Yeah, you really look at it as that he's done well. And so I know I had to do a thing for the Washington Post today. And what I had to do is I wanted to rate the quarterbacks and how they've done and how surprising. And Jim Moore's going to be happy about one of the things I'm going to say here in a few seconds. But
you might reconsider whether you want to say it or not.
I'll say it. It's like, I was beating him up on the Norton thing, so I'll make him feel better. I'll try to. But again, it's like you have to make the argument that Lamar Jackson was the best quarterback from that 2018 draft. And now you have to say, Josh Allen is second best. Now, he was the seventh player taken in the draft, but he's done more than Sam Darnold. He's done more than Baker Mayfield, who's completing 59% of his passes. I mean, certainly Josh Rosen was a disaster. I mean, he's 3 years into being a first-round pick, and he's on a practice squad, so that's not good. But I have to think that you have him being – Josh Allen now the third best. I mean, he finally got out of that rut of only getting 19.2 points a game. He's now scoring close to 30. That's impressive. And he did it against the Rams defense. It started out very well. The other thing I add is that from the 2019 draft, I think you make the argument that the number two quarterback could be Gardner Minshew.
Wow, Professor.
Sure? Again, I'm talking about from that draft.
Yeah, that's it was tough watching him last Thursday night, though.
It's going to be tough watching him the rest of the season because you see how bad that team is.
Yeah. What about tonight's game, Professor? Kansas City at Baltimore. It should be a good one.
Should be a great one. Yeah, because, I mean, you're looking at one of the highlight games, and you're talking about two MVP quarterbacks, you know, two of the best quarterbacks, young quarterbacks in football. I mean, there's never been a time in the National Football League where you've had two quarterbacks under the age of 25 that have each won MVPs. And here they are playing each other, and this is one where it's almost like the Peyton Manning, Tom Brady thing, where it's like, okay, they'll probably be trying to play each other each year because they all have good chances of winning the division if they're not going to be on the schedule on the rotation of division. So I think this will be a great one. I give the edge to Baltimore just because their defense is better. They are at home. You know that there's a bunch of question marks on the defense for the Kansas City Chiefs, but what we can see happening is that they've been blowing teams out, where Kansas City's now had six consecutive games where they've had to come back from double-digit deficits to be able to win, and that's because of Patrick Mahomes.
John, could you please call us at like 5:15, 5:30, 5:45 and just give us updates on the game?
Well, why is that? Because no TV.
Because we don't have a damn TV in
well,
here.
Well, you can go studio. Back home, can't you, and work from home.
Well, afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
After.
Yeah.
But I'll miss like
you want
the
him to leave during
half.
The middle of the show, John? Come
well,
on.
See, I mean, let's put this way. Are all three of you there?
No, just Dave and
home.
I.
Oh, okay.
I'm home, John.
Okay, yeah. So it's like
you don't care, John. You don't care that we don't have a TV here. You have your TV.
Well, yeah, but I'm always working from home. I've been doing it for two decades.
Okay.
Okay, but you're spoiled.
Yeah,
you've
well,
got a television.
I'm not going to argue. It's like you're right about that.
Yeah. John, we appreciate it. We'll talk tomorrow.
All right, sounds good.
All right, if you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up, former Ravens head coach and current NFL Network analyst Brian Billick will join us. We'll get his thoughts on whether Russell Wilson is truly the best quarterback in the league right now and everything else going on. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group, and you can download it for free. Take us with you. It's a beautiful week, supposedly. Today is day one, but we're supposed to have great weather all week. So you could be out there enjoying the sunshine, listening to the show, texting in, watching video, whatever you want to do. You can do it all from the app, and it's free.
So, well, can the app deliver a television to our studio?
I don't think it's capable of that yet.
All these people are like, Dave, you can watch on your phone. I don't want to watch on my phone. Okay?
Small.
I want a television.
Like every other studio in the building, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
And every other sports station anywhere in America.
It's a weird thing in this building. For people that don't know, there are multiple studios. They all have TVs in them.
Right.
Except for this one. But we can hit that later. Joining us now, a man you know, you love, former head coach of the Baltimore Ravens, now an analyst for NFL Network, Brian Billick is here. Coach, how are you?
How are we doing this evening?
We're doing good out here in Seattle. We're looking at a 3-0 team. We're looking at a quarterback who's playing absolutely out of his mind right now, and a defense that's really not very good at all. So we're trying to figure out, how do you make the defense representative so you can at least give the offense some slack, right? Right now it looks like the Seahawks can ill afford a game where Russell isn't magic, otherwise they're going to lose.
Well, they're clearly transitioning. I mean, they're clearly not the Legion of Boom. When they lost Jamal Adams the other night, that certainly was a big hit in terms of what they are in the secondary. You know, they have traditionally been a team that could put decent pressure on with a 4- and 5-man rush that allowed them to do some of the things on the back end, zone coverages and change up zones and the like that suited them very well. Well, they don't have the personnel for that right now. So they're having to do more. They have to take a few more chances. They have to bring a few more chances or a few more people in a 5- and 6-man pressure that does leave them vulnerable on the backside. But it's what you have to do. And again, as long as you got Russell Wilson doing just the absolute incredible things that he's doing, then you can play to that strength hope to try to get some turnovers and just kind of hang in there best you can.
Brian, what have you seen from Russell over the years kind of develop? I mean, he came into this almost as like a game manager. And then with a good defense and a running game, and then, you know, it just slowly developed. It seems like this last year, to us anyway, that he's really taking a huge step. But how would you sort of characterize his development over the years?
Yeah, I think what we've seen is the maturation at the quarterback position, where obviously a phenomenal athlete, and his ability to recognize and react is spectacular. But now he's adding enough of a base of experiences that it's now anticipation and recognize and react. And you see the great ones, whether it be Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady and the like, that are able to do that. And he is now elevating to that, along with obviously the things he does in terms of extending plays, his incredible ability to put balls in tight spaces. He's one of my favorite next-gen stats, is that chances of completability. And he constantly leads the league in throwing passes that really ought not to be completed based on the, you know, distance traveled, separation from the receiver to the DB, the speed of the individuals, yet he seems to find that spot to put them.
Hey, Brian, he's only 31 years old. He could probably play another 10 to 12 years, and he talked early on about wanting to be the greatest ever. You think he's got a shot at that?
Sure. Longevity is the key now, and we're seeing that you know, some of the great ones, whether it be Brady or Rodgers, like we talked about, are extending their careers to a degree that it's hard to imagine. I mean, Brady's, what, 62, 63 years old, something like that? Aaron Rodgers is not far behind. It seems like they're going to play forever. And certainly Russell Wilson, with his style of play and the way he keeps, you know, takes care of himself and what he's been able to do, it's not like he's going to have to manufacture things late in his career that he hasn't already done, because he's doing more with fewer throws than probably any quarterback that we have in the league right now, with the exception of maybe a Ben Roethlisberger.
Brian, what do you think of what you've seen so far? I think everybody was curious what the brand of football would look like with no preseason games whatsoever. You don't get those reps. Maybe you don't get to evaluate your roster the way you otherwise would. So you would see some sloppy ball. You'd see, you know, something looks unorganized. For the most part, I don't feel like we've watched anything that's less than, do you?
No, not at all. In fact, I'd just defy someone to, if I were to take film from a game in the first quarter of the season last year and show you one from the first quarter of the season this year, and you know, you didn't know who the teams were, the individuals, the year. You're just looking at it through that perspective, that analytical perspective. I don't know that you'd be able to tell me which year was which will be interesting going forward, because now the players, having said that, are going to say from their union on to the ownership and to their organizations, look, if we can perform this way without all that extra time in the off season, without the OTAs, and without beating each other up in training camp, why don't we just continue doing it this way? Don't think for a second that topic's not going to come up.
Yeah, you know, I would say this, and I'll argue with myself almost here, but, you know, the one thing that they could state is, what about the injuries? Now, I'll say this, the injuries that we've seen here have been more like friendly fire, just accidental, totally. But, boy, the injuries certainly are up.
Well, I don't know that. Well, I need to leave that to the professionals, so to speak, someone with a DR in front of their name, to tell me and go back and look. Are we indeed seeing an increased rate of injury and the nature of injuries? That may be. I don't know. It does seem that way because we've had some notable players hurt. But in years past, I don't know if we compare it over a 5-10-year period of time. Are we really getting more injury? Are we just more attuned to it? Are we more focused on it because of what the preseason was or was not? That analysis will happen, and I'm sure it'll happen at the league level. It'll happen with the union. Right now, I don't know. It feels that way, but I don't know that it is.
Speaking with Brian Billick here for a couple of more moments, and it's perfect that we were talking about Russell Wilson and how you view him. You've got a new book out called The Q Factor, The Elusive Search for the Next Great NFL Quarterback. Tell our listeners about this, how they can get a copy of it, but ultimately what this thing is about.
Well, basically, it's about the process. Even though we focus on the 2018 draft, which supposedly was the best draft since 1983. It had Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold and Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, and eventually Lamar Jackson. And these five players going in, this was the anticipation, and four or five players. And we looked at the process itself, because the process does need to be looked at. In what world does Mitchell Trubisky get drafted, in hindsight clearly, ahead of Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes? In what world does Josh Rosen get drafted at number 10 and Lamar Jackson go at 32? At the very least, you have to look at the system, the process, and particularly one that yields a first-round draft pick at best is a 50-50 crapshoot. You would think that would be higher, but that's exactly what it is. So we looked at the process, what we thought of these athletes coming in, how it panned out during the draft, how they've performed over the last 2 years, and certainly we're getting more data now, but it looks at the process, even though, you know, we're focusing on the 2018 group. They are the backdrop to the process that we currently use. And can we be better beyond 50-50, which it is right now? Can, as Bill Polian would say, can I just bat 525? Can I just be marginally better? Because if you're just marginally better, it may make the difference between a first-round bust and a first-round making it, wasted cap dollars, and missed opportunity.
So the book, again, The Q Factor, The Elusive Search for the Next Great NFL Quarterback, available wherever books are sold. How do people get it? And I know you got a promo code.
If we do, I don't know what it is.
All right.
But, yeah, just any place online. And, of course, there's the audio version as well. They can get it pretty much anywhere books are sold or online. And I think they'll enjoy it, particularly those areas that are in need of possibly a quarterback and be going through this process soon.
Perfect. All right. Again, the title, The Q Factor, The Elusive Search for the Next Great NFL Quarterback by Super Bowl winning head coach Brian Billick, who's been our guest. Coach, we really appreciate it. Always fun to talk with you, and we look forward to talking again in the future.
Sound great. Thank you very much.
There you go. Brian Billick, everybody. Coming up, Dan Quinn is in a bit of hot water, and Tom Brady is making Jim eat his words. We're going to hear all of that when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore. Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
The Cowboys are going to rush four. Russ has time. Now he's going to step up in the pocket. Still has time. Breaks one tackle. Throws to the end zone. And just off the fingertips, and another flag in the back of the end zone. The ball was intended for Greg Olsen. And he had a defender hanging on to him in the back. End zone. Yes, I heard that. I heard that too. Oh, my goodness, I believe was something what they said.
39 defense. That foul occurred in the end zone. The ball will be placed at the one-yard line. First down.
Well, it was one of the advantages of not having fans
here. That's right. You can hear all the chatter down there. That's Brandon Carr, the 13-year veteran.
I love it. You can hear him going, oh, my goodness, or whatever he was saying out there. So just to clarify, again, for people that may not be aware, we're hearing crowd noise on the broadcast. They're not piping that into the stadium.
Right.
Nothing. So all you hear are the crack of the pads and the yelling and everything else. Not a single other sound.
No, and you know, it's funny. I thought that maybe we heard that they piped it through. We were piping it through on the radio, but I don't think we were. So anyway, you could hear, like yesterday when Chris Carson got hurt, that place went dead quiet. And it was legitimately, like, you couldn't tell there were 10 people in there. Can you play that just a little, play that one part back? And just, you have to listen kind of carefully, because he's like, what? Oh, my God. You've got to be kidding me.
For Greg Olsen, and he had a defender hanging on.
The 13-year guy, Brandon Carr, and Rabel and I looked at each other and just started cracking up. But yeah, it's kind of cool to hear that. Now, you hear some bad things, too. We heard, well, cursing, but also heard when Bruce blew his knee out. He was out there yelling, not, you know, crying or screaming. He was just frustrated, you could tell. And, yeah, it's... But that's one of the good things. You can hear the crack of the pads out there, and then, yeah, it's kind of eerie, and it certainly doesn't. It's not better than having the fans there, because I'll tell you what, that interception, the other day against yesterday against Dallas, the 1 yard stop against New England. I'm thinking with the way this team has been at 3-0, and especially playing the Patriots last week on a Sunday night, that might have been one of the louder moments at CenturyLink Field.
Yeah, when you talk about how eerie it is, Dave, you know, is it like watching a scrimmage sometimes with nobody there?
You know, once the game starts, and I think the players have said this too, it's just a football game, and you know, I guess I don't notice, you know, that once you get into the game, it doesn't seem any different. But you know, there's just a few moments where every once in a while you really notice that that wow, there should be a bunch of noise here.
This last 2 week stretch is about as tough as it can get, and I do feel that way. When you have chances to go win it, and you come out on the other end, they definitely hurt. And so basically what we came down to say, like, it's not okay, and how do we find ways to finish better? And that's where our emphasis will be heading into this week, because there's plenty out there for us, but we've got to be able to finish that. And so, yeah, it's been a tough two-game stretch for this team, and you know, especially how the last two have been.
The voice of Falcons head coach Dan Quinn, and man, we love Dan Quinn out here. He's a great guy, and he was a great coordinator out here, but it feels like the clock is ticking in a very fast way for him. The note that Mora puts on the sheet here, over the last 20 seasons, no team has blown multiple 15-point fourth-quarter leads in a single season, and the Falcons did it 2 weeks in a row.
Wow. You know what? Mora pulled that one out of her brain. She didn't even have to look that
one up.
That was
off the top of her head.
Yeah.
She's a thesaurus. She's just a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, but it's just kind of the opposite of what's going on here, though, and it's too bad for Dan Quinn. Couldn't be a nicer guy. I really root for that guy, and I worry about him, but they rallied around him last year when they went 1-7 and saved his job, but it's just too bad.
She says she stole it from Field Yates.
Mora, now why'd you have to ruin it?
No, ever since the Super Bowl when they blew the 25-point lead, I don't know how he still has his job, honestly, but I'm with you guys. We love Dan Quinn here, but I don't think he's going to last the season.
No, I was watching that, and I tweeted out, are the Falcons trying to get him fired? What is happening?
Yeah, did they not like him?
Why do you hate him so much?
There had been some critics, more so on the national side of things, that may suggest that Tom Brady is washed up, his arm isn't as strong. When you look at the 45-yard strike to Scotty Miller right on the dime there, and then the 33-yarder to O.J. Howard, when you see him make those type of pinpoint passes downfield, what does that say about your 43-year-old quarterback and how much gas he's got left in the tank?
Yeah, there's been people talking garbage about him since, like, I started playing with him like 10 years ago. I'm saying he didn't have anything left in the tank. That's just simply not true. You know, just the way he can, you know, air the ball out and just, you know, put a dime on where he needs to. For example, those passes you just brought up. I just feel like he can do it. And it's like, you know, it's like he's not even 43 years old.
That's Rob Gronkowski, as Mora writes on the show, discussing how Jim is wrong about Tom Brady.
Yeah.
You're not going to go against the Gronk, Jim.
You're not alone in it, Jim. Obviously, they're talking about others saying he's too old, he can't do it. Then he throws three touchdowns to break up your upset special yesterday against the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, it's I still like the Broncos in six at home. Although
that's attaboy. Stick to your guns, Jim.
Like that one.
Although Tampa Bay won 28-10 there at Mile High Stadium, and
Jim told me during the game. By the way, I texted him, "Go, your upset special's not looking so good." He goes, "No, the altitude's going to get him. I feel good about her."
Yeah, wait until the second half.
Another harebrained theory.
Okay,
Jim, I still like the Percy Harvin trade.
I do too. He helped him win a Super Bowl. He took it all the way back, the second half kickoff. No, everybody can say what they want, but Father Time, he's undefeated. It's going to happen at some point. No, nobody thought Peyton Manning was going to fall off the face of the earth the way he did.
He had four neck surgeries.
Yeah. Ooh,
Peyton Manning.
Peyton did.
Yeah.
He had four?
Okay. Four.
I thought it was just one.
No. Four procedures on his neck.
Yeah.
That's why he's so funny.
Okay. Right. I'm going to stake what's left of my reputation that in the last eight games of this season.
Very little. It's a scant amount.
I know. I still have a little bit of it. Just kind of a skosh, you know, just a little bit. Smidge.
At some point, you're going to be right
stake
about
that.
This,
I'm going to stake what I have left that people are going to be saying, you know, Jim, you were right. Boy, I heard you back there September 28th talking about Tom Brady after they just beat Denver. But he's going to go downhill. Once he starts going downhill, it's going to be like a snowball. It's just going to pick up momentum. And I don't want to root against him, but
you
kind
are.
Of in a way I do, just so I can be right for once.
Jim, you're like a guy who buys like 50 scratch tickets and wins like $2 and says, see, I got our winner here.
No, it's all worth it.
But I know I'm going to be right on this one.
Well, eventually, no, yes.
43 years old?
Eventually, he'll be too old, Jim. You'll be right.
It's not going to happen for the Bucs this year. It's just not going to happen. I heard people last night talking about, hey, these 3-0 teams in the NFC, Chicago, Seattle, and Green Bay. Tampa Bay might be better than all of them. I'm going, okay, yeah, all right. Maybe I can see why they're saying that. But let's get back to me in November and December.
Now, what if he has a really good year but they don't win the Super Bowl? Is that you being right? Or what is it?
No, I'd be wrong again.
Okay.
Because I just don't think he's going to be very good when all is said and done.
Okay, so he's just flat out not going to be very good at the end of this year. When
Correct.
We look at his numbers, we'll go, that was a bad year.
Declining numbers as the year goes on, yes.
When you're wrong, I just want to encourage you to not beat yourself up too much, okay?
I think it's so funny when people always have to be right all the time, you know? What the heck?
Well, that's certainly not a problem.
You throw
for
opinion.
You.
What? I don't even want to hear what you had to say there, but you throw opinions out there and you're going to be wrong sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
We're ganging up on Jim right now. I feel bad. I've actually felt bad. Matthew, are you even going to step in?
He's in there cracking up.
To the host of the golf show, Jim Moore.
Yeah.
Right. Matt loves me.
All right, coming up, it's time for our player spotlight. We're going to hear from a very, very animated, excited, friendly guy, Ryan Neal, on what it was like to get called up at the last minute and then get the game-sealing interception. That is coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.